Hi folks, I'm head teacher of a fairly big primary school. We're heading to about 480 in August in a new build, and it's a very exciting and very busy time for us. And I've just completed the first SCEL fellowship programme, so I'm very pleased to be a fellow of the Scottish College of Educational Leadership. And I have become a complete research nerd over the last year, it has to be said. But I suppose my thing as a head teacher has always been about leadership for learning and learning-centred leadership. And one of the great joys of the SCEL process was meeting Clive Dimmock and being part of the discussion with him about learning-centred leadership. So for me, that's all about capacity building, professional learning, and inspiring children to becoming leaders of their own learning, because I think that's what we do in school. It's part of our core business. So I suppose we want to be leaders of ongoing professional learning. We want to allow that to contribute to systems leaders learning, and we want to be instructional leaders with our, to support our staff into better professional learning. And I suppose too, the basis of that is that we model high commitment to personal and professional learning. And I only have one sheet of scribbles because Graham has warned me within an inch of my life to go over 5 minutes. So I do talk a lot. So we'll see. Impact of learning and teaching. For me, it's about a culture of learning in the school. And we look very much at learning as everything we do. And I know that sounds a bit simplistic, but actually, instead of having a focus on teaching and learning, we focus on learning. Because when I moved into this particular school 2.5 years ago, we had a wide range of teacher capacity, from teachers who were identified as being outstanding teachers to teachers who had been very isolated in their practice and had no effective professional learning for quite some time. Some of them, if at all, in their teaching career. So to try and work towards a consistency of approach that would have an impact on learning and teaching, we had to address that. And for me, it's far better to address that through providing quality learning experiences for children, rather than saying, well, you're a good teacher, you're a good teacher, and you're not a good teacher. We have to look at what the learning is, because if everybody's working towards good learning experiences, teaching will improve, is our hope. And it seems to be wearing out. So where did we start? In a way, it had to be simple because there was a huge range. It had to be non-threatening, and it had to come through the focus of learning. So we started looking at increasing teacher toolkits and increasing the methodologies that were able to be used. And we started off looking at some of the Robert Marzano work, and it looks like one of these, you know, sort of 10 ways to lose a stone in a fortnight before you go on holiday. And it was about strategies for successful learning and teaching in schools. And staff took a chapter of these between two of them, and they went away and they practiced and they practiced and they did it in their class and they became experts in it. And then we all came back and evaluated how it had been, and then they picked another tool and off they went. And that's been going on now for about 2.5 years. So people are experiencing different types of professional reading as a starting point, but different types of teaching. And then now, because we've been doing learning rounds alongside that, they're going in and out, observing these different methodologies, and it's impacting on consistency and on practice. And I suppose, as a development of that, we've seen a lot of excitement around the change. And to use a fairly hackneyed phrase, over the last year, we've seen a high level of professional uplift. At SCEL, we've been very fortunate. We've had Alma Harris, we've had Andy Hargreaves, and we've had Alan Boyle, and they've talked around the book Uplifting Leadership. But actually, professional uplift has been massive in school. Just by starting to talk about learning in different ways, we had teachers forming little learning groups, going off into classrooms at lunchtime and talking about different bits of things they've read or different bits they've found and brought it for everybody to share. But systematically in the school, we looked at the research that was underpinning some of the co-teach work by Madeline Friend and some of the reciprocal teaching strategies. And so we formed little expert teacher groups who started from that research, taking it into the practice, and then supported other colleagues into a consistency of approach across the school. And in that way, we were kind of scaffolding the learning for those who didn't have the confidence to do the learning. Because one of the things about professional update in my school certainly was that it scared some folk rigid. Because how are they going to do this? How are they going to evidence their professional learning? So that was a real challenge. And one of the barriers to that was confidence. So by scaffolding the learning for everybody, they were allowed to develop greater confidence to say, I've read this and I've read that, and what do you think about this? So we've had lots of learning conversations. And I suppose then we took it further into the Diamond Model of Professional Learning that's on the Education Scotland website, and we looked at the things that we were implementing in groups. So now we've got groups of staff all the way doing the reading and the write-up around reciprocal teaching, around co-teach, around inclusion, and around the different aspects of work in the school. And I suppose for us, we had to think, why were we using a research-based process? Because we had to have that shared understanding of what we were doing and why we were doing it. And really, it's about the integrity of what we're doing. We are trying to take risks at times and do things differently, but it has to have some sort of credibility and rigorous practice if we're going to achieve that consistency and have an impact on learning and teaching. And I suppose, as for me as a head teacher, that the driving factor is that we've got to ensure that robust pedagogical reasoning if we're going to take a risk. We can't just take a risk and waste children's time. There has to be something that underpins it that says this is worth taking a risk for. So, impact. It's had a huge impact on the staff. It's had a huge impact across the school and the community. There's an ethos of expectation in the school. Everybody expects to be part of something that's worth doing, and that's making a difference. Our attainment statistics are way up because there's a huge investment in learning, not in being a good teacher, but being a learner in our school, and that's had a huge difference. Staff are now going from that sort of group learning into individual study. And what we're finding is that we've got better learning and more competent learners throughout the school. Parents are engaging in the process. It's increased collegiality. It's developed really effective collaborative working. And actually, it's been authentically inclusive for staff, because it's not, well, we're the good learners and we're not the good learners. Everybody's in this together. We're all on the same page. We're all learning together and improving. So I think, on the whole, it's critical for what we do. I think it's improving the workload expectations on staff because they're sharing their learning, they're working together. There's a lovely article, I brought it with me, that we all read together a couple of weeks ago from Sweden on professional learning impacting on teachers' health, and that teachers are healthier when they're committed and passionate and learning and feeling they make making a difference in what they're doing. And I suppose, finally, the belief in our school is that this determined view of learning for our staff and children alike brings a true collaborative approach, a culture of innovation supported into practice, and a far richer and more fulfilling environment for all, where achievement and attainment are flourishing. It's a happier school, it's a learning school, and children are having wonderful experiences.
In terms of the fundamental question posed, I think we've got a good story to tell at the moment in Scottish education, and one I think that's improving, but I probably would emphasise that I think we're all pretty much still on a journey in terms of getting the research embedded in what happens in schools. I think if you were to ask me that question 10 years ago, you'd get a very different answer. I think there was a time when there would have been a lot of mutual suspicion because university people did research and teachers taught, and many would have actively resented any notion that someone from the university could come in and help them to change their practice. And I think one of the big cultural things we've managed to get a bit better in Scottish education is that that's going away. Thank goodness. It's never been a particular issue in my school because, just speaking entirely personally for a second or two, My motivation has always been to be the best head teacher I can be to get the best outcomes for the young people in the school. It's always been to work in partnership with other schools in my local authority area and out with, and indeed with others like University of Edinburgh, to take forward learning and teaching. And thirdly, I've always been very keen to learn from other countries, so that we can, make that journey the government wants us to make, to being a truly world-class education system. So we've been open to all of the new stuff that's been on the go. Helped, I think, by some pretty important milestones along the way. I think the new GTCS standards, for example, have been most helpful. I won't quote you, I've got several pages of quotes here, but we don't have the time for that. But, I mean, it's explicit that from student-teacher level, right the way through, all the way to the dizzy heights of head teacher, wherever you aspire to end up, it's there, it's part of the furniture, and there are very, very explicit references within the standards to what teachers should be doing, and research and inquiry is there in black and white. So I think that's particularly helpful. Secondly, the Donaldson Report. Again, I'm not going to go over everything that was said in that, but I think that again crystallises that notion of us as professional learners and improving, and there's clearly a role for research in all of that. Interestingly, as a head teacher, I don't know if you see it in your own professional life, but I'm beginning to see reflections of it coming through. You see it in application forms now. Students, teachers, NQTs will put stuff about the research projects they've been undertaking in their application forms, and I'm getting people to interview now talking about some of their experiences. So I think the new entrants to the profession are already becoming imbued with this, so I think the future is probably quite rosy if everything else can be brought together. A wee bit about the school. There has been, I don't want to sound like I'm boasting, but there is genuinely a culture of capacity building in the school. We've been at it for a long time. One of the questions is about starting points. I think Annette made reference to starting points. In my school, and in South Lanarkshire, it was the assessment is for learning, which was a research-based piece of work, that was the big catalyst. And that put learning and teaching at the forefront of all the professional learning that was going on in my school and other schools around South Lanarkshire. A bit like what Annette was saying, we have been slowly changing the culture from one where people were resigned to having to go on courses they didn't really want to go on, and being defensive about anything that sounded vaguely new. I think we've got over that, and we're now in a culture where it's good and okay to collaborate with our colleagues and to work together on the key issues that the school sees as important. So in our place, in-service days are no longer the boring events they used to be. I say as little as possible, which everyone's extremely pleased about, and we get people involved in group activities, discussions, witness sessions, sharing, and discussing. So we'll pick, and we've done that with themes, pace and challenge of learning is something we're concerned about. There'll be a session on an in-service day around those sort of things. We still have a bit of furniture from the past. We still do things like classroom visits and so on. Universally not liked by teachers, and probably not a particularly clever way to bring about improvement. So it was with open arms that I read an article somewhere about learning rounds, and someone mentioned that man's name at the back of the room, Graham. So I contacted Graham, and he came out and helped our staff, and we worked on learning rounds. We have now delivered, I think, certainly into double figures of learning rounds now. And we can work with some people in India who are doing a learning round over there. I've invited people from other schools to come in and take part in our learning rounds, and they have been a huge catalyst, because it's away from the it's been done to you approach. It's something you're involved in because you want to be, and staff by and large find learning rounds very, very useful and certainly very, very enjoyable. And the fundamental reason is because it's a non-judgmental process. The language is a language of description, what I saw, not making or passing comment on other colleagues' professionalism. And staff started to pick those messages up, to the point where some of our faculties do their own learning rounds as part of their kind of self-evaluation processes. And we pick up on the findings. We did a learning round based on questioning technique, fed all of that information back, came up with a few issues, had an in-service day session where staff came along. They came prepared with their 10 questions that they'd been asked that week, asking that week of the young people, and we had a discussion around those, how could they be improved and refined. Then we did another learning round a few months later, and there was a noticeable improvement to be seen. So that's the kind of approach that, we've used. We also completely changed our approach to professional learning and development, or whatever it's called in your part of the world. We were talking about it at the table a few minutes ago. I won't go into a lot about that, but in my school, that was a good way to free up discussions about learning and teaching. So we wanted to go beyond learning rounds. What was the next step for us? What should we do next? So again, I bet Graham's ear, and we had some discussions around that, and he introduced me to Gillian, who's going to speak shortly. And we've started a series of action research practitioner inquiry projects in the school. Do you want to talk about them all, Gillian, or do you want me to say anything about them in detail? I'll just leave that to you.
No, you have a...
So we've got five in five different areas, and they're quite innovative, quite exciting, very early stages. We've got one based on an upture project we've got in school, one based on how to get young people themselves to better self-assess their work, and that's in a drama context using video. We've got another one involving boy-girl, one that Marcus is doing, is this based on questioning techniques?
Involving boys much more than taking ownership of the learning.
We've got flipping the classroom, which I think Joanne will talk about, so I won't say very much about that. And we've got one of our historians who is trying to change the delivery of the history curriculum in broad general education using iPads. So we don't know what the outcome is going to be yet, but we're on a very exciting journey, and staff are absolutely loving that. Just moving on. Top of that, we do a number of other kind of things with a research basis. We're involved in something called MyCognition. I don't know if you know about that. It's coming from computer gaming, and it's meant to focus on some of the cognitive skills that computer gaming programs can activate in young people. And we've got a lot of children in the school with additional support needs who are involved in that. If anyone's interested, you can speak to me later and I'll give you the contact. We've done some stuff on mindsets. We built that into our induction programs for our senior school pupils. We were talking about Carol Breckle here earlier on. So we do a wee bit on mindsets, and we also have a link up with the Tapestry organisation in terms of practitioner inquiry. Overall, in the round, I think we are going forward. We're making progress. Definitely a changed mindset, not on every single person in the school, but generally, definitely. Focus is very much on learning and teaching and the delivery of that, how to make it better. And we've got lots of good examples in the school of staff trying to change their practice to encourage deeper learning, thinking skills, and basically as a way of enhancing the engagement of young people with learning and teaching. Some of the background factors to that, we mentioned it here a minute or two ago, part of it, and again I'm not blowing my own trumpet, but there is a leadership angle to it. It is encouraged, it's built in my school, that's what we're about, and I think you need that if you're going to get any consistency. I think that's shown through the other example we had there. It's obviously led, the process is led, so we have that vision, we have that leadership for doing these things. And, you know, personally, partnership's a key part of this, absolutely fundamental. That's one of the things I'd like to think I do a lot of. I'm always looking for new partners and getting new ideas. So those are the kind of things that I think have to be there. Some big questions, good, if you give enough 30 seconds. I think there are big issues around the quality of perhaps of some of the research. And that's where if you have a partnership with, such as we have with Gillian, you get that built in. But there is a danger that people are running around researching and it's rubbish. It could be. So, you know, somebody needs to have some kind of oversight. There has to be some way of quality assuring it. I think there's huge big issues around the use of ICT. The iPad example is a good one. Lots of us familiar with new machinery and kit coming into school. We pick the new shiny toy up and we use it to substitute for existing practice. And we're using more expensive kit to do what you used to do, well, my dear, on a blackboard, then a whiteboard, and so forth. Whereas what we should be doing is using the technology to transform the learning process for the young people, which is a whole different kind of kettle of fish. And we're just at the beginning of that. There's a huge potential there, and a whole set of PhD research projects, I'm sure. Sustainability, partnerships are great. I love when Gillian comes to visit my school, it's great fun. But how do we sustain that over the long term? How do we make these things happen? How do we embed them? So there needs to be some kind of overarching structure, whether it's local authorities, whether it's scale, whether it's the government, that tries to get some sort of consistency about how we do this and maximise the benefit for young people, because there's a lot of ideas, a lot of skills, a lot of knowledge out there. How do we bring it together? And I think that's me done. Thank you.
Colleagues, I'd like to speak to you about a journey that we're all going on in terms of professional learning. And one of the questions we were asked today in listening to colleagues as they've been speaking about this idea of learning-centred leadership and a real strong focus on learning and high-quality learning with sustainable outcomes. And we were debating about what one of the things was that we would look for in an excellent teacher. And for me, it is about the teacher being able to justify what they're doing, why they're doing it, and for what purposes, and for whose purposes. And for me, those are the most important things. And that brings in really three important parts of the journey I'd like to talk to you about in terms of working with teachers to develop high-quality teaching demands high-quality professional learning. And one of the key strands that we take for high-quality professional learning is using research as a professional learning process. Yes, drawing on research, we were debating this idea of evidence-based or evidence-informed, but the idea of practitioner inquiry is to actually use research as a professional learning process. And it is through that process that we get the three key areas in terms of teacher learning, of personal, that personal journey they make, the professional journey they make, and undoubtedly, and this is the one I think that perhaps not everybody's quite ready for, is the political journey that they make. And the idea that if they are critically informed teachers who do question for what purposes and for whose purposes, sometimes that means we don't do what we're told. Because when we actually distill it down or analyse it in terms of being critically informed, we realise that sometimes we're doing a lot of stuff that is not going to impact on the learners in our classroom in a positive way. Indeed, it detracts from positive learning experiences because it takes away teachers' time doing stuff that is not focused on learning but on ticking boxes or whatever. So there is undoubtedly a political dimension to this, and I think that's important. Otherwise it can be really sweet and prissy, this lovely idea of teachers doing practitioner inquiry and producing wonderful posters as you see around the room. But there is undoubtedly a political, some might say price to pay, I would say dividend, in the sense that we are actually changing the face of education in terms of looking deeply at learning and at deep sustainable change. So to put my money where my mouth is, if I'm going to be working with teachers to develop that kind of learning, then I have to be able to answer for what purposes, for whose purposes, and why. So Marlene Cochran-Smith takes it way beyond this idea of just the what of inquiry, but actually the why of inquiry. And she speaks about this idea of inquiry as stance. And just that idea of the political, one of the key things, when I was thinking through when Graham said to, had distributed the questions before the talk today, how do we get started? And then I thought, you know, so often we start with the how, and I think we have to say, why do I get started with inquiry? Why is inquiry the best way forward for me? And it's when we ask that question, we think, well, actually, what I want to achieve is capacity building for deep, sustainable learning in my school, or in my university, or in my local authority, because, of course, the other thing that we know is that it has to happen at every level of the system. This is not just about schools. Universities are learning and changing all the time. Too, local authorities are learning and changing. And this inquiry needs to be going across each level of the system. So if we're going to get that deep transformative change, yes, it has to be systemic, but it has to be fit for purpose. Whatever we choose for teacher learning has to be fit for purpose. If, however, and this is your point, Colin, there is really poor practitioner research out there that is seen as instrumental because it's in the standards, which is a great thing and it's a bad thing. It's a great thing in the sense that it's chipping off all of our tongues. It's a bad thing and it can become something nothing. It becomes absolutely nothing. In fact, in some ways, it becomes worse than nothing. It actually fights against what we were trying to achieve in the first place. And it becomes an instrumental thing that teachers feel they have to do, and that's it, done. Tick. Oh, yeah, I've done my inquiry, that's it. And you can tell very quickly, speaking to a teacher who's been doing inquiry, what level of understanding they have of inquiry and what level of understanding the person who has supported them in their professional learning has about inquiry. Because when they talk about it and they say, well, I proved this, that's the first NINO sign that says that's not inquiry. The second one is, that's it, done. Yeah, I've done it. I've done that, and we're moving on to the next thing now. So when you read Marilyn Cochran-Smith's chapter, you'll see that she speaks about this idea of it being a worldview, a perspectival worldview, where it is a way of being, it's a way of thinking, and it's never done. It's constantly changing and evolving. And that's when you know, when it's the teacher that says, I just realise how much more there is to know, and I just realise what I haven't been doing or what I could be doing, have been doing differently for the last 15 years. That's when you know you've made a big change. So what I brought along for you today are four posters, and the lovely Rosa's got the fourth one, and we'll maybe start with that one, Rosa, because we've been working with inquiry in different... Would you mind? In different dimensions, yeah, because it's really pretty, thank you. That's lovely. Just a wee bit higher. All I want you to get is the idea, just what a lovely, attractive poster. It's a nursery teacher who's done this poster, and it really is wonderful. Thank you very much, ladies. Now, this nursery teacher is at the very beginning of a journey on inquiry, and her poster, for those who know about research, would look at that and say, there's an awful lot of important information missing there. That's not the point. She's on her journey. She's at the very beginning of her journey. She has begun to systematically inquire into her practice. She's begun to explore and interrogate. And I use that word choicedly. She is interrogating her practice. She's not just examining it. She is interrogating it. So that's the beginning. Now, that teacher has come back this year onto another local authority course, and she has conducted one other inquiry in the interim, and she's onto another one already. So it really was the beginning of a journey. The moving to the other end of the spectrum, if you like, is this one here, was done by a master's student in her second master's course. And the one over here is one the last teacher from Collins School, who is actually changing Scottish education as we speak. Because what he's done is looked at the flipped classroom in an S2 mathematics class. And there are so many secondary colleagues now contacting Craig and following him on his blog to look at this really innovative way of maximising the children's learning time and developing their metacognitive awareness in the classroom when releasing him to teach while the chalk and talkie bit is done by video as homework. Fascinating. This poster is one by a head teacher, and as Colin said, and with no apologies, how important leadership is. There is never one way to do anything, but I can absolutely assure you if the leadership in the school is not with it, then it's going to have very minimal impact. So this is one head teacher's journey of taking forward a whole school, well, two schools actually, he's head of both two schools, of taking forward two schools through inquiry. And he's now into his fifth year, I think he's a colleague of yours on the scale. Graham, I don't know if you want to hear from our colleagues in local authorities as well. Is there time to do
can
that or very quickly?
Quick soundbite, just yeah. To give a reference there, we can follow up and send stuff out.
Okay. Angela, would you like to say something about it?
I've been working with Jill on the partnership working with University Fife, which is where I'm from, East Lothian and Edinburgh City, on a master's level practitioner inquiry course. And it's been I keep talking about journeys today, it's certainly a journey for us, the local authority people working with Jill, because we've really been helping Jill to really write the programme, evaluate it as we're going along. We are co-tutoring the participants from across authorities, and within my little tutor group I'm tutoring teachers from all three different authorities. And we're all going to be involved in that assessment process. And, you know, we're on a journey, and it's a really great group we're working with, and it's really good to work with other colleagues as well in pulling the course together. The journey of the actual participants has been, they've grown in confidence as we're going through, but there are a lot of challenges as well have come to the fore. You know, the skills of inquiry and reflection, we can't just presume to be innate in anyone, in us or the participants within the course, and that's become quite clear as we pull the course, the programme together. Also, people being able, having the confidence to access quality literature and research and being able to then read it critically and have the confidence to be critical about what they're reading is another thing that we've had support with and have a lot of discussion around. And then as it's a master's level course and we have to produce some assessment around it, it's translating that into a critical style of writing, which we're just beginning to embark on that process at the moment, and it is incredibly challenging for some of the participants and for some of the tutors as well. So I think what it's highlighted to me in going through the process is some of the challenges that faces our whole profession, but also within our local authorities, how we best prepare our teachers to begin to engage in master's level learning, because certainly for some, the leap towards master's level learning is quite a big leap for some, and you know, there are a lot of challenges around my role within the local authorities education officer as a strategic remit around professional learning. And we are really having to look as local authorities at how we support our teachers towards master's level learning, and this experience has helped me inform my thinking.
Thank you, Angela. Tony, do you want to say a quick word?
Yes. In my authority in West Lothian, I'm a union learning rep, but I'm a chartered teacher, and that's where a lot of my desire to work in teacher development comes from. I think having gone through the process yourself, you're on your own journey of learning, then you want others to experience that as well. So I found within my authority other chartered teachers who also want to encourage practitioner inquiry, and that's how we came to find Jill and ask her to kind of work with us in our authority to try and work with the teachers who were maybe not going to do a postgraduate course, because we do have postgraduate course at Stirling University through our authority, and that's paid for, but we wanted to widen the opportunity for more people to take part in practitioner inquiry at their own level. So that's where the union funding along with the local authority funding has helped to promote that. So we're in our second year of doing that, and we have teachers coming back on the course this year to help mentor other teachers, because they feel that they've taken the lid off, they have been transformed, and they want to keep going and they want to keep being involved with it because they find it very exciting, and it makes me much more excited about teaching, and everyone who comes on the course feels much more excited about what they're doing in their classroom, and for me that's great. You know, that's what we're all about.
Like Colin, when I agreed to do this, I think, well, that's months away and it'll be fine, and I thought, gosh, must we get this, what do you think we're going to see? Then I thought, oh, there's an apocalypse at 9:35. We survived that, and we're here. I thought I'd just begin by, I was going to focus on, I've changed what I was going to say during the course and hearing other speakers. It's evolved, and that's the benefit of being in a forum like this, where you're continuing, you're being challenged, and you're evaluating, and you're thinking about your own practice. Meeting others is a wonderful way of developing your thinking, and I think we can do enough of that, particularly in a small country. The context in Scottish education, just very briefly, I think certainly in a secondary context, we have unprecedented change. And in time, at times of unprecedented change, when leadership kicks in, and then how you manage that change and how you take people with you. And other times, I find one of the biggest challenges I have is to, if you like, to manage to control that change and the level of change. If there's too much coming at you, staff just get swamped, and that's when stress and so on and so forth. In my own context, it's the second school I've led. Started 3 years ago, and just at the beginning of my time at the school was about to be demolished and rebuilt. We had management restructuring, and in my first 2 years, appointed 53 out of the 70 serving staff. So there has been phenomenal change against the backdrop and a context of curriculum for excellence. Somebody recently asked me, what is curriculum for excellence? And I thought, gosh, what I said was, well, I see it as an opportunity to throw everything that we've done over the last, my teaching career, 35 years, up in the air, and to pick the good ones, and to use them and to throw out the bad ones. Think of it as that way, the totality of experiences. Let's use our experiences and change and rebuild from the good things that have worked. In terms of deciding what's good and what's bad, well, so much of that is subjective, and I think research has an enormous part to play in that, and going beyond your own country is absolutely key. There's an expression, I don't know if you've seen a copy of the letter that Abraham Lincoln asked to his school when his son started in the school, and there's a lovely expression in it where he says that as the teacher was the head teacher, where you have to apply a screen of wisdom to what you do. And I think as a head teacher, one of the things that I have to do is to apply a screen of wisdom, because there are many, many demands about things that you should be doing as a parent. The number of parents have told us how to raise our children, how to get them to go to sleep and what they should eat. Gosh, we're just inundated with it. As teachers, head teachers to think. So you have to apply the screen of wisdom. And that screen of wisdom, whether it comes through life experience, but also speaking to others. And part of that is the research that you pull in as well. My background is in science, it's in physics. So naturally, I like an evidence base to draw from. So I tend to be somewhat cautious and more rational sometimes in the changes that I make. But against that, friends describe me as a bit of a risk taker too. But as you get older, I think the risk taking diminishes. My first opportunity really to do any kind of research at a personal level was when I did a master's degree in the mid-90s. I did an MBA, and I looked at my dissertation was on, at that time I was head of department of physics at Portobello, and my dissertation was on what should Portobello High School do to raise its position in the league tables. That was in 1995. The league tables had come out in 92, 93. And how did we look at that research at that time? Some of it would still be valid and reliable. And I ended up going round, identifying the top 8 schools in Scotland, or the south of Scotland, and visited the head teacher, spent 2 hours with them, and asked them, what is it you do that's different? And I learned from that, wrote a report. But that kind of, I think, sparked an interest for me in research and learning from others. So I'm very much in favour of learning and working with other people to challenge my thinking. And I think that's really important. Talking about my context at Gillespie, so we have predominantly a very young staff. They're staff who are receptive, so I see this fertile ground. What I don't have, compared with other schools I've been at, is a huge amount of experience, in the sense of when you're thinking about change and development and improvement, you draw on a lot of experience. When you don't have that, I think you need research then to get that experience. So research for me is a means of getting that experience so that you take it with you. One of the things that I do find in my school is I've got people who will challenge me if I say, look, we should be doing active learning, for example. And gosh, I've been challenged in that and saying, well, where's the evidence? Where's the proof? There was a good article in The Guardian this week, if you saw it, about challenging whether in fact passive learning might actually be more effective for some people. So research evidence, hugely important. What in trying to run a school and to develop a school, take a school forward at times of unprecedented change, as I mentioned earlier, I try and use resources optimally to make the maximum impact on our learners. So using resources optimally to the maximum impact. I'm going to give one example, because there are several projects that we currently have working with researchers in different universities. I'm going to give one example, and this concerns our South Africa project that we have. And just, I know one or two have spoken to you today, or either have children through the project or have some association with the school. And 11 years ago, my predecessor, Alec Wallace, went out of South Africa, and then we forged links with a school out there. We now have links with two high schools there. We work with them. We have, it's not called a, my colleague Neil McCallum is here, has led this, not a, we don't call it a trip, Neil, we call it a project over the last few years. I've been out twice. We've picked up the scene in our South African classroom. We work with two schools, Williamsey and Diloko. The average class size is somewhere between 70 and 90, and basically there is a blackboard at the front of the room, and that's it. Gosh, that's challenging. And one of the things that really surprised me and kind of shook my thinking, my understanding of where I thought I was taking a job teaching in my school was coming back, some of our sixth year students who came up with us said, can we not be taught like that? Can we not learn like that? And I thought, gosh, I didn't expect that. I was somewhat thrown by that. I thought the way ahead would be active learning, group discussion, collaborative, IDL, and so on and so forth. The older I get, the more I realise how little I know. Learning all the time. In terms of learning with our South African schools, what we're planning on doing, a colleague approached me around 3 months ago and asked if she could spend time in one of our South African schools having a look at what is happening, what it is that they're doing. So I thought, gosh, that's interesting, because last year we celebrated the 10th anniversary of our work with that school. What she's going to do is, through the months of May and June, she's going to spend 2 months out there. And in the lead-up to that, thank you to Graham for the contact, she's been working with a researcher here from Edinburgh University to look at the research methodology that she will use in order to, I suppose, maximise her time out there. The aim of her project is to have a look at what impact the work that we've done with the school has had over the years, and to come back, write a report, and basically inform us as to how we should take the project forward in years to come. The project, I don't have time to discuss or to describe what was on there. It's an enormous project involving parents, former pupils, former staff, and so on and so forth. But with that, we've been working with them for 10 years. We're now looking at where next, where do we go? So this member of staff is going to spend 2 months there. It's not a huge amount of time looking at a certain question she's going to answer. But fundamentally, it's how do we use our time and our links to make the biggest positive impact on their school, but also our school community. That's what she's tasked with doing. So it's a big ask, and I look forward to reading a report. I'm going to finish just with a quotation from one of our QIOs who, when she was working with us last summer, where she said, right, we're looking for schools to look inwards, to look outwards, in order to move forwards. I like that. Inwards, I think we're pretty good at in Scottish schools. I mean, heavy is the source for self-evaluation. We're pretty good at, possibly we overdo it a bit, think less of impact. Outwards, I'm really interested in. I mean, being here today is looking outwards, but I think we need to go way beyond our own borders in this country. As an aside, we also have an exchange link starting this year with a school in Germany, and also a 3-year link now with a school in Tenerife, which we're going to be looking at developing, sending staff, doing staff exchanges with. I'm really going to risk assess the journeys on the hotel. That aside, though, I think in terms of moving forwards, research, working with experience is the way ahead, and that's that. I've picked somebody about it.
Just a few thoughts, really. I think what first one is, we're lucky in Scotland that teachers are conceptualised as professionals. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing. It's easy to take that for granted. I was at a seminar this morning where somebody from the US was talking about teaching as a craft and teachers being given scripts to teach to. So we are, even though life is hard, it could be an awful lot worse. That's the first thing I want to say. And the notion of teachers as professionals is that a research disposition is now embedded in our standards. So we have a policy context, which is really, I would say, valuing teachers quite highly and wanting to see the profession strive even further for the benefits of our children. Mm-hmm. In terms of what I've heard today, a couple of things that struck me. There are lots of different ways of getting started. These range from individual enthusiasms about something, like the flipping classrooms, to something bugging somebody, something bugging a head teacher about the way the school is operating, and thinking about, well, what evidence do we have around? Not something we haven't talked about is the evidence that schools have anyway. Schools now collect a hell of a lot of data. And one of the things that Vera tried to emphasise was schools are data rich, but actually research poor. In other words, not thinking through, and Jill's phrase, interrogating their data. The other issue I just wanted to talk about, point I wanted to emphasise, was the importance of leadership and creating a culture that is non-threatening, that is developmental, that emphasises learning, things that you were saying. The things I heard about getting started were working with partners, being alert to stimuli from outside, not just inside the school, reading, going to different countries, especially Tenerife, as a great choice. But seriously, I do think we can learn a lot. We're a small country, and that has lots of advantages, but the disadvantage is we can get rather introspected, inward-looking, and have a kind of quasi-Likas approach. So I think it is very good to be alert to what's going on outside. I'd like to end by saying how you sustain that culture is really, really important. Teachers think about things all the time. Anybody who's ever taught knows as you go out the door, your head's full of what's going on. And the challenge for us all is to how to get beyond that reflection and thinking, which is good enough in itself, but isn't really transformative. That's what we're all here, that's what we're all trying to get to. How do we create the spaces to do that? And you can create these spaces in different ways by doing a bit of research, but you don't have to actually engage in research to become critically reflective. It's one mechanism. There are lots of other mechanisms too, reading, talking. So thank you so much for coming. It's hard to sort of sum up everything that I've heard. I hope you found it a rich experience, and how you sustain it all, I think, is the real question. You can do one-off projects, but how you, as Marilyn Cochran Smith says, you develop in critical inquiry stands as a habit. This is how you think as a teacher. We've got a long way to go, but we've had some wonderful examples here today. So thanks very much.